Tea and Strumpets, a Regency Romance Review. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Kelsey.
And today we are back to Maiden Lane with the book that you were most intrigued to read once we started this series.
Yes, I was most intrigued to read this because they really played it up in that first book. And then the second book came and it wasn't about these people.
I know. What a tease. What a tease. But we have read it and I can't wait to discuss it, which we will do a little bit later.
Yes, we will. And today, sadly, I have no history fact for you, nor do I have an author fact.
Well, that's okay. That just means that we're going to get into our synopsis and our discussion quicker on the book that we read today, which is Scandalous Desires, number 3 in the Maiden Lane series by Elizabeth Hoyt.
Yes. And today, our main trope is Beauty and the Beast. Thank goodness you put this because I was at a loss.
It is 100% Beauty and the Beast. Like a quarter of the way through the book, they sit down, he has her and he's really angry because he orders her to come to dinner and she won't come to dinner. And I was like, oh my God, this is Beauty and the Beast. And
literally, I was thinking that too, because then he, you know, is like, well, then you can stay in your room and starve.
It's so good. And he's very misguided at moments. And he has his Lumiere at moments.
Yes.
So I definitely felt Beauty and the Beast with this one. So, yeah, it was funny, though, how it took a ways into the book and kind of those big moments where I was like, oh, yeah, duh.
Well, it was funny because I was thinking that, too, like when I was trying to think of main tropes and I was like, well, it's very Beauty and the Beast. And I was like, but he's not ugly to look at. He's just beastly in attitude.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a little bit of a different one.
And our main characters today are Mrs. Silence Hollingbrook and charming Mickey O'Connor.
All right. Well, shall we get into our synopsis?
We shall. Silence Hollingbrook has found herself in the throne room of charming Mickey O'Connor again. This time, it is because O'Connor has taken Mary Darling, Silence's adopted daughter. And as it turns out, she's also Charming Mickey's daughter, and it turns out that Mary Darling is in danger. Charming Mickey has angered the Vicar of Whitechapel, whom we met in our last book, and fears that the man will target his daughter and Silence. Learning of these circumstances, Silence agrees to stay in O'Connor's house until the threat has passed. She's given a fine room for her and Mary, but Silence immediately chafes at the rules that Mickey lays out.
She begins to challenge the great pirate king, and while it angers Mickey, he is not going to throw her out. He's been plotting to have Silence under his roof for a long while, ever since she spent the night the previous year with him to save her husband. Within a day of arriving, Silence is upsetting the careful order of the pirate lair. She refuses to come to dinner with everyone else, so Mickey says she will not be allowed food until she changes her mind.
Mickey gets his own small victory when Winter Makepeace comes to rescue Silence, and she refuses to leave with him, stating that she must stay because it's the only way to keep Mary Darling safe and in her care.
Mickey is at his wit's end, trying to figure out how to break Silence. One of his men and Silence's guard, Harry, suggests that perhaps he go with kindness over high-handedness. Mickey takes his advice when he finds Silence has disobeyed him again by leaving her room and has proceeded to commandeer the kitchen to wash Lad, Harry's dog who loves Mickey, despite the fact that he's always throwing him out of the house. Mickey proceeds to make Silence a cup of tea and they have a brief chat, with Silence learning a little bit more about the pirate and convincing him to let her keep Lad in the house.
After Mickey walks her to her room, he informs her that she will be moving rooms the next day because he and his men were followed that night on a raid, and he wants to keep an even closer eye on her and Mary Darling. So in her short time there, Silence is learning more and more about the feared pirate, Mickey O'Connor. He has a side of him that is kind, but then he does shit like take a kiss from her in a very forceful way after Silence confronts him about how he messed with her life the year before.
However, Silence ends that kiss with a slap to Mickey's face, and he ends the encounter with, quote, "She leaned close to him. Something you will never have. Something you're incapable of feeling. I pity you, Mickey O'Connor, for I may have lost my true love, but at least I had him for a time. You'll never feel love."
The next morning, charming Mickey O'Connor, the feared pirate king, comes to ask Silence for forgiveness. He gives her a peace offering and breakfast while asking her nicely to join him for dinner. Quote, she stared. Had Mickey O'Connor ever begged anyone in his entire life? He grinned, quick and rueful. Oh, aye, the pigs will be flying today, so I've heard.
So Silence does go to dinner with Mickey. While their dinner conversation helps soften Silence's opinion of Mickey, she really begins to feel the attraction when she finds him singing to Mary Darling to help her sleep after she's been feverish for a few days. Silence learns about Mickey's childhood and how his mother fell into the trap of an evil man, which left Mickey without a mother's proper love and care to Silence's eyes. She tells him forcefully that every child deserves a mother's love and protection. In that moment, Mickey finds why he is so attracted to Silence. It is because she is, quote, a woman who was as fierce in her maternal love as he had been as a boy in his will to survive.
This time they share a kiss, a caring kiss, not a forceful one. And both walk away a bit more aware of the other. Their dealings with each other continue to be filled with this new awareness, and Mickey, now Michael to Silence, makes a declaration to her, quote, he looked at the tears on her cheeks, his lips brushing softly against her sensitive skin as he spoke. You've bewitched me and bespelled me, my sweet Silence, didn't you know? I'll agree that the sky is pink, that the moon is made of marzipan and sugared raisins, and that mermaids swim the muddy waters of the Thames, if you'll only stop weeping. Me chest breaks apart and gapes wide open when I see tears in your pretty eyes. Me lungs, me liver, and me heart cannot stand to be thus exposed.
That night, Michael takes Silence to the opera, and they have a lovely time. There is some sexy talk, but overall, it is just an evening of enjoyment. However, that is all shattered when they arrive back at the palace and find it under attack. Fionnuala, the maid who had been helping care for Mary Darling, has been killed by vitriol, which is basically an acid attack, to the face. She did manage to hide and protect Mary, who she had shoved under the bed with Lad.
Everyone is horrified, and Silence asks Michael why they would use vitriol. He tells her that he used the stuff to try and kill Charlie Grady, the vicar of Whitechapel, who is behind all the threats to Silence and Mary. In a moment of comfort, Silence kisses Michael, but this is cut short when her brothers and brother-in-law appear to take Silence away with them. Based on the events of the evening, Michael tells Silence to go with them to get her out of London. He does tell the brothers that his enemy is the vicar of Whitechapel, so they must be on their guard.
And then after making plans to strike against the vicar, Michael leaves London to go after Silence. So a week later, Silence, who's been a bit mopey, finds Michael outside her brother-in-law's country house and agrees to leave with him.
A week after that, she finds herself at Windward House, the home of Mr. Michael Rivers, shipbuilder. It turns out that Michael, aka Charming Mickey, has been building a life outside of pirating for himself for the last 5 years. He has invested in shipbuilding businesses that actually bring in about the same amount of money as his pirating.
He is convinced Silence is going to ask why he continues his pirating ways, but is surprised when she asks about why he threw vitriol at Charlie Grady. Michael tells her that he did it in order to protect himself from being whored out for money to buy grain for Grady's gin operation. He tells her that his mother never forgave him because the man he has scarred was in fact his father. So Charming Mickey O'Connor, river pirate, is the son of the vicar of Whitechapel.
That night, Silence cannot stop thinking of these revelations. She decides to go to Michael's room to ask a couple more questions. Once she's there, Michael asks if she's planning to stay. Silence surprises him by telling him yes. He double checks with her, not wanting her to regret her decisions. Silence, however, has always found her courage with Michael and says that she is staying there of her own choice. And this is where we have encounter number one, which continues to show us the softer side of Michael. This is followed closely by encounter number two. The next morning, we get encounter number three. Silence is now trying to reckon with what exactly being Michael's woman means. He has not mentioned marriage or even her being his mistress. She's falling more and more for him and isn't sure what their future will look like. Their bliss for mourning, however, is interrupted by Harry, who has caught the spy that has been in Michael's camp.
Michael decides to take this traitor to London himself and put him on a ship to teach him a lesson. He's still reeling from the betrayal, and he wants to keep his sinful side from Silence when she enters. She wants to know what's going on and pulls more of his past from him. Michael decides it's a great time to show her oral sex, so we have encounter number four. That evening, Michael does go to dinner with Silence before going to London. Silence, who has admitted her own feelings towards Michael, wants to know what role she has in his life. Will she be a wife or mistress? Why is it so important he remains a pirate? Michael had never envisioned their life beyond where they were now, and does not understand why that is not good enough for Silence. Quote, "Is that what this is? A test?" He felt the anger rise in him again, seeking a victim even if she might be innocent of any outrage against him. "Perhaps it is," she said slowly. "I need to know that I'm more to you than a woman in your bed, Michael." "You know full well you're more than that," he growled in outrage. "What do you want from me?" "Truth," she whispered, powerful in her softness. "Honesty, friendship, and perhaps love."
Silence leaves dinner, and Michael knows he done fucked up. However, he does not alter his plans to escort the traitor to London. Before he goes, though, he gifts Silence with a dagger and shows her how best to use it and protect herself. And I believe there is an encounter before he actually goes.
I think you're right. Once he leaves, Silence decides she can no longer stay at Windward. She cannot stay with Michael if he insists on remaining a pirate. She travels back to London, and Michael, upon seeing that she has left him, sends men to guard her and goes on his own downward spiral, which ultimately ends up with him being captured by soldiers and charged with piracy, thanks to Charlie Grady.
When Silence learns that Michael has been arrested and is due to be hanged, she finds a way to see him at Newgate. Michael has not been idle in his imprisoned solitude. He has been making plans for his escape and also thinking about Silence. He realized that she could be pregnant and that having a bastard would be embarrassing for her, and he never wants her to feel any pain. Silence arrives at the prison, and as soon as he sees her, Michael bribes the guards to send for the prison chaplain and marry Silence on the spot. Quote, "Come here," he whispered, and pulled her into his arms. He leaned his forehead against hers. "I'm sorry, so sorry. I made a mess of things at Windward House. I should have known ye and the babe were all I ever need. The money, the pirating, they were just shields I was holding on to, fearful-like. 'Twasn't me best decision, love." "Oh, Michael," she closed her eyes, willing the tears back, for his honest admission made her love him even more.
And they have their wedding night and encounter 6 immediately after, in the prison cell. The day of the hanging dawns, and Michael is prepared with an escape plan and the knowledge that Silence is his wife and he knows he loves her. Then things get really crazy. Charlie Grady ambushes Silence as Michael is being led away. So Michael tells the guards with her to send all his men after her and to go tell Winter Makepeace of these developments.
Michael makes it all the way to the gallows and is even dropped. But then the rope is cut down by none other than the ghost of St. Giles, who then proceeds to distract the soldiers in the crowd as Michael makes his way to Silence. When he arrives, it turns out he was not needed after all. Silence had bided her time, and as soon as Charlie Grady got close enough, she stabbed him in the back, killing Michael's father and greatest enemy.
And all's well that ends well, because Charming Mickey is even more of a wanted man now. It's best that he dies, so they make it look as though he has. And Michael Rivers and his new wife live happily ever after. And if you read the epilogue and you know what the next book is, you find out the identity of the ghost of St. Giles. But we are not going to spoil that here.
No, we won't. As we have done in the last ones, you know, the epilogues really set up the next book. And so we're just not going to cover them.
No, you can't in this one because the next
exactly.
book.
Exactly. Their story ends. The epilogue is the start of the next book.
All right. Well, I can't wait to talk to you about that and more. So shall we first adjourn to the parlor?
We shall.
So we are here in the parlor in the present.
Ooh, time travel.
Yeah. So for those of you that maybe didn't listen to the last episode, this episode that you're listening to right now was recorded in 2021. And so now we are in 2022 and we are here to tell you about something very present and very pertinent to the times.
Yes. In honor of Bridgerton season 2 coming out, the people over at Pomp and Whimsy, Jin, reached out to us and asked if we would be interested in having a little Bridgerton party given to us in a box.
Yes.
And they delivered us the most gorgeous box of goodies, including a bottle of their Pomp and Whimsy gin liqueur. And let me tell you, it's my new favorite thing.
First of all, it's gorgeous. Second of all, it's gin, which is like our favorite drink. I don't know how they knew everything right about us. Bridgerton. Okay, that's easy. But like we also are both gin girls. And so like I was so excited to get this box for the beauty and for the beverage.
Absolutely. I was also very excited. And I've almost finished my bottle, which is really upsetting because – they gave us these cocktails and they were delicious. And I've just been making them in my free time at home, like at the end of the day, because I can't get enough of them.
So tell me a little bit about these cocktails that they recommended to pair with the Bridgerton premiere.
So they sent us a recipe card with three curated cocktails. Now, it turns out that they have a couple more on their website, which I did find another one that's inspired by Violet Bridgerton. And I'm definitely going to be trying that at a later date. But yes, so the ones they sent us were a Lavender 75 based off Lady Whistledown. Mm. The next was inspired by Anthony Bridgerton, entitled The Bee's Knees.
Oh my gosh.
And the last was inspired by Kate Shorma, and it is a Negroni Rose.
Ooh. And which one was your favorite out of those?
My favorite was a Lavender 75 because it pairs two of my favorite things, gin and champagne. So really, I can't get enough of it. And that's mainly been the drink I've been drinking. They sent us some lavender that I could use to make a lavender simple syrup in order to make this Lavender 75. And it was so good. I am out of lavender simple syrup now. I need to make myself some more so I can continue to enjoy this Lavender 75. Although I will say the Bee's Knees is a close second for me because it's citrusy and beautiful because it's mainly just lemon juice and the Pomp and Whimsy gin, which
yum.
I'm really like citrusy, bitter kind of sours, which me I love. Too. And I will say even the Negroni Rose, Negroni is not my favorite cocktail, mm-hmm. but this one with the Pomp and Whimsy, it just has this beautiful flavor palette to it and it doesn't taste just like alcohol, which is really what my problem with a normal Negroni is.
That is awesome. Now, I have not yet tried my Pomp and Whimsy gin. And this is not because I'm about 6 months pregnant. This is just because I haven't yet watched Bridgerton. And so I've been saving it. And my plan is to make some of the cocktails and let my husband drink most of them and take a little taste because I have to. I'm so excited about it. And like there is something about the bottle being so beautiful too. I know that's so silly. Like don't judge a book by its cover. Don't judge an alcohol by the bottle. But like, come on, we all do.
It's beautiful. You can tell the quality and the love that was put into this, and you can taste it with every sip. If you want to read more about my thoughts on these cocktails, as well as Pomp and Whimsy Gin, I put a little blog post on our website that we will link to in the show notes so you can get a little bit more information and more detailed thoughts of mine.
Absolutely. And if you want to learn more about Pomp and Whimsy themselves, you can find them online at pompandwhimsy.com. And speaking of Bridgerton, we haven't spoken on the podcast yet about what we are doing for Bridgerton season 2. So we are going to be doing a reaction / discussion episode, and we would also love to hear from you, our listeners. We've got a short little survey about your thoughts about this series and also a place for you to put any questions you have for us that you'd like for us to answer on the podcast episode about Bridgerton season 2. And we'd also love to hear your opinions. So there's a place for questions and a place for opinions. We'd love to hear everything you guys are thinking. So if you would like to participate in that, you can go to bit.ly/malletofdeath to answer those questions.
Yes, we look forward to hearing all your thoughts and opinions because we have our own.
And we can't wait to share them.
And if you want to just find us on social media, you can find us at Instagram and Twitter at T as in Tom, N as in Nancy Strumpets. We are on Facebook /T as in Tom, N as in Nancy Strumpets. And you can also find us on YouTube by searching our name.
And as of this recording, we are just single digits away from hitting 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. So if you would like to help us get to that number, because that's a big goal for us, that would be so cool. All you have to do is hit subscribe on our YouTube channel, and there is a link to our YouTube in the show notes. So there's a pretty quick click.
And if you just want to be in the know or keep up with our show, you can find us on our website, which is romancepod.com. And you can find episodes, more information about us, and other resources. So take a look. Okay, so let's pick this book apart.
Let's do it.
Well, 100% Beauty and the Beast. We talked about that earlier.
Yes.
100%. Going back over it again, it's like, and then they went to dinner, and then...
Yeah.
And then his Lumiere was like, you have to woo the woman.
Yes. It's so, and you know, and then they have the big fight, you know, at the end, and da da da.
Oh, yeah.
He has to let her go, right? Like, yeah. So he lets her go
he
with
her
brothers.
He lets her go because he knows that's the only way to keep her in his heart.
Oh. So... How did you like this book? You were excited for it. So how did it work for you?
I will say the concept of it, I really liked more.
Mm-hmm.
Like it did hit on the things that I like in a book.
Yeah.
Now, it's hard for me to talk about my general thoughts without getting more into the character.
Charming Mickey, I'm betting.
Yeah. As well as Silence, too. But yep. I'll try to keep it general for now and then talk about the characters when we're going to in-depth them. But overall, I really didn't like the whole plot. I thought it was good, but it wasn't too overly complicated. And I liked how the vicar got really kind of tied in there even more. That was really interesting how that tale got woven in. Because also in the last book, you know, we saw bits of the vicar, you know, and he was looking up at the woman upstairs, you know, his grace, and he talks about his woman, you know, breathing her last. And like, that's the whole catalyst for him to kind of go after Charming Mickey through Mary Darling is Mickey's mom dies. And so the promise of not harming Mickey, which is kind of the promise. She was kind of the peacekeeper between the two, so they didn't kill each other. And now that truce is broken because she has died, and now they can really go at each other.
Yeah, it's interesting because I remember loving this book. And rereading it, I started and I was like, oh, ugh. Like, I was just like not that into it at the beginning because Mickey, especially in the beginning, is pretty off-putting. You're just like,
oh,
how am I going to like you?
I was rereading some of it when I was like skimming it when I was doing the synopsis, and I was just like, ugh, ugh, ugh.
Yeah. And I really thought like, how am I going to actually like you? But she did a good job for me. She turned it around quick enough that all of a sudden you start to see a crack or two in his facade and you realize like, yes, he's a man who's done terrible things and made terrible decisions and, you know, has been a villain. But underneath, there's a different person that just has really never had the opportunity to come out because of the circumstances of his life. And it worked for me, ultimately. I think the middle of the book is the strongest part. I think the beginning and the end are a little bit weaker.
I would agree that the beginning feels very slow. Because when I was rethinking about the events, I was like, oh, this happens and this happens. And then I realized like, oh, no, there's like a lot more in between. Like her time at the palace is only a couple weeks and it takes half the book.
Yeah, for sure. And I love, I actually love like all the stuff with the side characters kind of mm-hmm. in the book. I mean, like what you get with like Harry and Bert, her bodyguards, and Lad and Mary Darling and Fionnuala, like it's great. It doesn't feel slow. Like it doesn't feel like, why am I not reading about the hero and heroine? Because you're getting pieces of the hero and heroine.
No, you
through
are.
Through those characters.
And they're kind of learning about each other, like almost through the side characters a little bit mm-hmm. in that sense, because like they're not mm-hmm. directly talking and they're not directly like their only confrontations are with exactly that. They're confrontations. They're not meetings. Their silence is, you know, pushing against the rules. And he's like, grr, woman. And, you know, yeah. so it just they're butting heads quite a lot. And then once Mickey listens to his Lumiere. Mm-hmm. And goes to woo the woman, it gets a lot better.
It does. It does. And he has a good reason. You know, he has a good explanation for it in the book, which is like, I've never encountered a woman like her before. You know, like he's really only been with women who have been kind of paid or, you know, want to be with him because of his power. Mm-hmm. He's never had a woman who resists him. And that is part of what he's attracted to, but not completely. He's attracted to lots of things better. Anyhow, let's get into the characters, because I think that they really are so instrumental to this book.
They are. I think they really carry it, because I think that, just like you said, for me, we'll start with Charming Mickey. I really didn't like him at the beginning.
Yeah.
I really hated him.
Dick.
He's such a dick. But like that moment breakthrough where he like makes her the cup of tea is his turning point. And he really does have this beautiful, gradual turning point, and he becomes this really wonderful man almost at the end of it.
Yeah, I think Mickey was really difficult to like in the beginning, but he really came around for me. Like, I was so surprised how much I liked him by the middle of the book, you know? And I think there was something to be said, too, for the fact that I also didn't really like Silence at the beginning of the book. So I think that they both were on like their high horses, and you could kind of see that they were going to be good for each other. So even though both of them had these kind of frustrating aspects about them, I think because of that, you were like, well, these two people definitely need somebody to make them better. And I think that if, you know, I think that this other person and their perspective will actually improve this person. So by the middle, Mickey worked for me. And then he has his dumb moment where he's like, I'm not going to stop pirating. And you as the reader are like, but you've literally built yourself a life to escape.
Yeah,
to.
You've literally built yourself an escape from the life. And that
it made me think that like the Dread Pirate Roberts in The Princess Bride, how it's just a name is like attributed to someone and it just carries on. I just assumed he was going to give the name on, even though I read the book before and forgot about the whole gallows thing. But so it just seemed like, oh yeah, once he like is done with his like revenge business, he can escape and go live quietly in the country. I don't know. But he had to have his lapse and
he had to have his like real true breakthrough. He had to have his downward spiral.
Yeah, for sure.
He had to get drunk and sit with his treasures and be like, it's all meaningless without my family.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I will say too, but that really shift changes. And I will say like, I really made an effort in the synopsis to switch to calling him Michael towards the end of it, because I see like Mickey O'Connor and Michael are two different people.
Absolutely. And I think that that is what the author tried to show us too. Mm-hmm. Like she tried to say like there is a separation between them. They had different accents. They wore different clothes, you know?
Yeah.
And as kind of like obvious as that is, I mean, yes, he still has aspects of both of those people in his whichever persona he's in, but that's also what makes each persona slightly more human.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
So what would you rate Mickey at the end of the book?
I'm gonna give him an 8.
Really?
Yeah, I liked him at the end of the book. Like, I really, truly liked him at the end of the book.
I did too. I'm going to give him a 7. I'll give him a 7.5 because I really liked him. It wasn't quite enough of an 8 for me, but I really liked him.
No, like I truly like, because for me, like I really felt about halfway through, he really turned around and I really enjoyed it. And I mean, when I was doing the synopsis, I was kind of like reminded by how awful he was at the beginning of the book. And I was like, oh, God, he's so awful. And I'm like, but I remember liking him, even just in my short read from not that long ago. I was like, but I liked him. And then as I went further along, I was like, oh, this is why I liked him. It just didn't like beginning of the book guy.
Yeah. All right, so Silence, I already alluded, I didn't love her. She's a little bit pious, right? Like she's been brought up in this very religious family and, you know, she's been brainwashed to think many things. And this book is partially like her kind of coming to grips with, I don't know, reality and also learning that like, everything she's been taught and told of how to feel is maybe not the best. And that's great and everything, but I just didn't connect with her nearly as much. I did connect with her on like the mother level because Mary is a little bit older, I think, than Serafina, my kid, but they do some of the same things. Like at one point, Mary shouts at the dog lad, she goes, "Gog!" And that's exactly how Sarah says dog right now. And so it's like, it's so cute because it just, there are so many moments when the author is describing like Mary, like cruising around the settee. And I'm just like, that the way she describes it is like exactly the way that like Sarah does things right now. And so it was very cute. And I really loved, you know, Silence's kind of mothering moments and connected with those. However, And I like the way she stood up to Mickey and held her ground and all that. But I just – there just something fell a little flat for me. How did you feel though?
See, I think that the Silence in the second book and even in the first book, I really didn't like.
Yeah.
I really didn't like her. So I kind of came in not planning to like her that much. But I – for me – I felt that her ability to stand up to him and like kind of like agree but set her own boundaries with that, I thought that was something almost out of character with the Silence we'd already known.
Yeah.
And I liked that Silence. You know, I like the fact that Silence is the one to kill the vicar.
Oh, that is the best. That's a very, you know, Violet from I Kissed an Earl moment.
Yeah.
And I could not love that more. And how she was just like, well, I killed him, obviously.
Like, yeah. Like, she's like, I'm sorry, I didn't aim for the eye or the chest. I just stabbed him in the back. It's like, that works. It's fine.
Yeah. She wasn't fancy about it. She was like, this, and she killed him with one stab. She was perfect. Yeah. Anyhow.
No, but I, there's a lot of wavering back and forth, which I'm not always a fan of. But at the same time, too, think that there was a bit of that clash between the naivety that was Silence. And I think that you and I both, we really just don't like the naive female trope, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at the time, though, reading it, it's really interesting to read it because I'm like, oh, God, did people of a certain class literally live and believe these things? And the answer is yes. Like,
yeah,
which is wild.
No, they did. Yeah.
And so I think meeting him really was, again, like you said, they're able to bring something out of each other. And again, as Silence like kind of moves through the book, I liked her more and more. But I also liked her ability to push, but not in a super confrontational way. It wasn't a violent Eversea where she's like, ha ha.
Yeah.
You know, she does it in her own quiet way. But she's like, I'm sticking down, though. Can't move me.
For sure.
And so I think she definitely, I like her best in her own book. I'll say that.
I agree. I agree with that. I don't think that there's anything I can pinpoint. It's just that I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with the personal like of a certain trope of a type of character. And I think that she just fell a little flat for – what I love to read about. I think she was good, though. I'm going to give her a point less than Mickey because I liked Mickey more. So she's a 6.5 to me.
That's fine. I'm going to give her a 7.
Well, this is feeling very familiar.
Yes, it is.
So do you have a favorite quote from this book?
You know, I don't know if you have this, though, but we do have a really great description of the library in the palace.
Uh-huh.
I have that there.
Cool.
And, I think this is great. Like, she's talking to – Silence is talking to Temperance about how she feels about Michael, and she's kind of explaining what we talked about. So here it is. Quote, "He's no longer just a pirate to me. He's charming Mickey O'Connor, notorious river pirate, but he's also Michael, a man who loves butterflies, who told me about the worst parts of his childhood, who took me to the opera and sat as if entranced by the music, who sings to his daughter. Don't you see? I might be fascinated by charming Mickey, but I could never love him. Michael, I can, I do."
Oh, very sweet. I really like that quote. When she's finally coming to terms with everything, it's a great explanation.
And then I'm going to read the library
thing
because, you know, it's really funny because she made a point to look at the libraries and describe the libraries. And I'm like, full Beauty and the Beast mode. "Naturally, Mr. O'Connor would have a library like no other she'd ever imagined. It was a middling sized room, but from the carved rosewood ceiling overhead to the thick Persian carpet underfoot, the entire place was fantastic. Ancient statuary stood about the room, no doubt plundered from ships. Here, there was a Diana in flight, her hunting hounds bounding beside her. There, a bust of some ancient bearded dignitary. And the books! Every surface held open books, each one fabulously illustrated, from a folio of exotic animals to a tiny prayer book, delicately illuminated in gold."
A room I would love to be in.
Oh, yes.
So my favorite quote is a kind of a weird one. It's actually "Winter make peace," and he's talking to one of the boys in the home. And I just thought this was actually a pretty good bit of parenting. So I'm going to take from a bit of a long passage and kind of chunk it up. But this kid had a sling and he says that it's not his. And Winter says, "You know that I do not condone lying in this house. A man's word is a treasure he holds within himself, no matter how poor his outer garments. To squander it recklessly is the mark of not only a fool, but a cheat as well. Now tell me, is this sling yours?" The boy swallowed, his small throat working. "Yes, sir." "I am displeased to hear that you've been playing with a sling," Winter said calmly, "but pleased that you have spoken the truth to me. As a punishment for the former, I would like you to sweep out the kitchen hearth and scrub and clean the outer tiles of the fireplace." And it's just, I thought that was really cute, but he continues at the end. Before the boy leaves, he turns around and he says, "I'm sorry, sir." And then Winter says, "We all make mistakes, Joseph," Winter said gently. "It's how one acts afterward that distinguishes the righteous man from the dishonest one." And I just thought that was actually like,
that's a good, beautiful moment. I really enjoyed that moment as well.
And it's a good bit of parenting. Like, I am displeased that you lied, but, you know, or I'm displeased that you were playing with a swing, but very, you know, happy that you have told me the truth.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it was very clear. And so I just was like, oh, it's very, I don't know. I just really liked it. It was touching. And, you know, you get bits and pieces of Winter throughout the books. And a lot of the time he's just this like kind of frustrated, cold man. And so this moment of him taking this time with this child is really heartwarming.
Yes, it is. You also get to know Winter a bit more in this book in like the side chapters, which of course I don't focus on. But
yes,
he's very good.
Mm-hmm. So I have a lot to talk about here in our section of steaminess rating and encounter counter. I think there was at least 6, if not 7, because you didn't count the time where he grabbed her hand and put it on his member.
I did not, because I didn't want that to – like, because I actually – in my notes, I was like, encounter question mark.
Well, and this is the second book in this series, three books where the man like grabs the woman's hand roughly and like puts it on his erect member.
Yeah.
And I'm just, yeah, I know. But it's just, it's like even the way that it's said in the book is very like, I don't know. It's just, it seems weird. It's like, was this these kind of like rough men? Was this like a bit of a fantasy of the author? Because I don't think this continues in our heroes as a trend in this book. I remember some very gentle heroes in this series.
Yeah, I think it more stems from, you know, the typical old, as we said, the bodice ripper, in the sense that like the notorious pirate mm-hmm. or the like devastating yeah. rake, like has to like, there has to be that kind of like forceful act that opens up the naive virgin's, you know, sexuality. And in this case, Silence isn't a virgin, no, but she is naive to the point of like, yes. you know, even her husband wouldn't let her explore. Like, it was very much
she'd never seen her husband naked.
Yeah. She's like, I saw him naked like once, maybe twice. And I'm like, geez.
Yeah. Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, like she'd never even been naked in front of him, like her husband, you know?
Yeah, what a way to live.
Yeah, seriously.
So it was, I would say though, overall, it was pretty steamy. Like I thought they were really steamy, except for the scene where they consummate their marriage in the prison cell with lots of people like 10 feet away.
Yeah.
And I am really like, I'm all for it. Like, you guys are in love. Go for it. I'm so glad you get to have sex in a prison cell. But like, they are trying to be quiet, I guess. But like, all I could think of as reading this scene is like, there are sounds. There are sounds that happen with sex. Like, there yeah. just are. And like there's so to me that scene was not steamy because I just was like, they're 10 feet away. There's even like someone coughs at some point.
Yeah, no, and like jars her. Yeah, no. Yeah, I will say that wasn't like the sexiest of scenes. I will say overall, aside from that first forceful moment, I will say there was a bit, and when it gets better again, was then afterwards when she does consent to sex with him and says, I want to stay the night. I will stay the night. He's like, are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
And she's yeah. like, yes. And he's like, okay, great. But he doesn't just like fall on her like we expected him to. He actually like, you know, takes his time.
Well, even after that forceful moment, they don't have their first encounter for a while.
Yeah,
like
no.
a good at least month of time in the book, I believe, because they don't sleep together while they're at his palace. It's not till they get to no. Windward House, I yeah. believe. And so they actually have like a lot of moments where they do have a few kisses. And so they have some development in between and a lot of like, you know, will they, won't they tension. So definitely by the time you get to an encounter, it's like way more I don't know. Yeah, I forgive the first kind of thing because it doesn't feel like either of those characters are that character anymore.
Well, exactly. It's that whole switch from Charming Mickey to Michael. It's like, because Michael shows his more caring side to her than Charming Mickey ever did. Charming Mickey was the forceful one.
Yeah. Well, on that note, how do we feel about our feminist recap? What would we call this book? Yeah, it's a bit of a brain teaser for me. I feel like
it leans towards supporter.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense of like, Silence is strong. He wants to break her, but then realizes he actually likes her for her strength. Mm-hmm. You know, he teaches her how to defend herself. He really doesn't talk down to her, I will say. Like,
correct.
And so, and again, like I said, we have that one not so great scene, but then everything else after that, like all the other scenes after that are like both parties very much interested.
Yeah. And I mean, I think like the relationships in the book are all actually pretty positive. I just think that's not what this book set out to do. I think this book set out to like tell a fun story about a pirate. and show a strong woman that somebody like that needs a strong partner who's not going to put up with their BS. And that is, you know, a feminist supporter. But I don't think that that's what – I don't think that that was like the intention in either of these characters, like number one. So I think this book is a supporter, but I don't think it's this – it's not like one that I would tell someone, oh, if you want to feel like, you know, you're ready to go, you've just gone on a, you know, feminist march, read this book. No, I would tell them to read Bombshell or Brazen and the Beast or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, so I think that it's definitely, you know, it's a middling ground.
Agreed. So then you've read this book now. What is your final rating for this book?
For me, I believe my final book rating would be a 7.5.
I am a 7. So we're very close again. We're just slightly off on our scale, but this is the highest rated book so far of the series.
Yeah. No, I did enjoy it. You know, it's definitely my favorite so far. Again, it does start slow. But I really liked I did like the concept of it, and I did like the characters in it. So 7.5. It just wouldn't be like a high recommendation, you know.
Agreed. I think it was fun. And if someone's reading the series, I would say like, yeah, read that one. Don't skip it. There's some cool stuff in there. It's a good book. But yeah, it's not my favorite. I've got some others coming up in the series that I'm really excited for. And now, without any spoilers for anyone who has not yet read the epilogue or this series, Kelsey, I do have a question for you. Were you surprised at the identity of the ghost of St. Giles?
I was not, actually.
Oh, really? You'd figured it out?
Really? I figured it out only because they kept there was a lot of hints dropped throughout the other ones, and I was like, what's going on here? Clearly, there's a secret life going on.
Oh, the things you think you know. This series has so many more twists and turns for you.
Yeah, so I am very – but yeah, so I will say this. I am interested in the next book.
Yes, the next book is very good. I highly recommend it. It is one of the ones that, well, actually, I think I can say this. This is it's an older heroine and a virgin hero. So there's a very steamy scene that virgin hero lovers like to talk about from this next book. So if that's your bread and butter, check it out.
Excellent.
And I'm jumping in here again from the future to say that next time we are actually going to another beloved author of the genre who we often get requests for, and we are going to be reading Lady Sophia's Lover by Lisa Kleypas. So thank you all so much for listening, and join us next time as we read Lady Sophia's Lover.
And may all your ever afters end happily.